Hello, and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who are battling asthma and have some weird and suspicious mail. Anyways, we are your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. Today, we are going to be continuing part of our Flock Talk series, which are shorter episodes where we tackle bite-sized topics. Usually, we're doing so over cocktails, and they also come with a foul language advisory. So beware. Today, our topic of conversation will be emojis and e-discovery. But before we get there, Angie mentioned something about crazy mail.
Yes, I'm so curious. You've been holding this secret back until we record, and I've been dying to know what's happening in the mail.
So when I was out traveling, like I went to the techno security conference, I went to a roadshow that we were doing in Detroit this week. So I've been out, I've been a little bit off the grid. You know, when you come home and you check your mail and you're just like, oh my God, there's so much crap in here. Like it's usually just a bunch of junk mail. Well, I get something from the insurance company and I'm like, oh God, which doctor retired or like what drug am I taking that they don't make anymore? Like, no, this one was notice of coverage for acquired brain injury. And then
what?
It was the letter that says, hey, your health benefit plan now covers the following things that might be associated with a brain injury. And I'm like, what? I am brain damaged? What happened? What information?
Did no one tell you?
I know.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, I'm thinking about it and I'm like, okay, wait, I have my insurance through work. So maybe like one of my twisted coworkers reported me for having some sort of brain aneurysm.
Which... That is a long con. If that is the case, one of your coworkers is like, let's see how I can fuck with Bree. I'm going to report her for having a brain injury in case those types of claims get covered.
Who knows? So I posted it in my chat at work with my colleague, and several of them were like, we're not touching this with a 10-foot pole. No comment. I heard from someone else that I know that doesn't work with me that got the same letter, but she goes, I actually did have a brain injury, but it was 30 years ago, and I don't know how they know this about me. But I have never had a brain injury. I act like I've had a brain injury.
That you remember.
Right. Maybe I forgot. But it did make me laugh. I'm like, oh, great. Is this a sign that my life is officially falling apart?
Oh, my God. That is hysterical.
Good.
I love it. Speaking of signs that your life might be falling apart, have you heard of the Aura Ring?
I've heard of it, but I don't have one.
It's like a fitness tracker. And so I got one. Boy, I did not expect that level of feedback about my lifestyle. First of all, I did not realize just how much drinking affects my sleep, and it feels like a personal attack. I feel a little bit judged by this piece of hardware, to be perfectly honest. So there was that. And then apparently I have a freakishly low heart rate. Like my resting heart rate is like 38 beats per minute.
Whoa.
And my ring, despite I've had it for like a month now, it's just like theoretically it should know me, but every morning it's like, girl, you okay? You alive?
Oh my gosh, that is crazy. You know, I have a CPAP because it makes me feel better about going to sleep with a large apparatus on my face. it'll give me grades.
It does that. It's like, oh, you slept, you had an optimal sleep night.
Yeah, you almost died no times tonight.
Do you feel like you've become sort of dependent on it? Because now I wake up in the morning and I'm like, well, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel until I look at my Aura ring.
I did that for a long time.
Oh my God. Anyways. Back to eDiscovery. Like Bree said, today we are talking about emojis. Those eggplants, the little poops, the unicorns, hearts, etc.
That's right. And they're really important in eDiscovery because people are using them more and more these days. Trust me, I have used more emojis in the last year than I ever have in my entire life because my 11-year-old got a phone. And not only that, we use them on our team chat at work. There's constant emoji usage. Nobody
All
even
the says, time.
I really liked what you had to say. They just give you a thumbs up.
Did you know that there are over 3,600 emojis?
Holy crap. I mean, that actually does not surprise me. Did you know you could create your own? And in the legal context, it's really important that we interpret them accurately, because if we misconstrue emojis, the legal consequences can really be extreme.
That's so true. Think about it. Misinterpreting an emoji could be the difference between guilt and innocence, between liability and exoneration. So if we're gonna dispense justice and we're gonna be fair about it, we better be interpreting this big part of communication correctly.
Exactly. So let's talk about how emojis can affect the way we interpret digital evidence. So emojis can convey a tone, right? Like I can be talking to Angie and be like, dude, I am super excited about whatever it is. And I can send her that mind blown emoji. She gets the tone that I'm like over the top. And yeah, they can be used to express emotion. I'm happy. I'm sad. I'm frustrated. I'm tired. I want to throw up. They can also interpret our motives or our intent. If you see a text message from me that's like, man, I want to kill somebody, blah, 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 use a gun. Am I laughing about it? Am I really planning death? What's my intent? We can also use emojis for cute stuff, though. And I think it's hilarious when people use it when they send each other a Venmo and they haven't kept their account on private. They just send $30 and they put a picture of cookies
instead of text. I love that.
I think it's so cute. And you spend like 30 minutes trying to figure out what perfect emoji to send someone.
This is actually how I Venmo people. I don't use words anymore. I just Venmo them a zebra.
And sometimes, I mean, I really do think that people use emojis because they intentionally don't want to put into words what they're feeling or thinking. How many times have you read a text message and you're like, I don't even know what to respond. I'm just going to send them the upside down smiley face emoji because who the hell knows what that even means anyway.
And they'll right? Or the melty face. I like the melty face one for just like, Also, as a millennial, I use the like laugh cry emoji all the time. I also use emojis partly because I don't want people to misinterpret what I'm saying. You know, I might say something that at first blush looks really serious, and then I use that little laugh cry emoji, and then the person receiving the text knows I'm kidding. That's how I use them, you know, in my personal life. But it becomes really important in the legal context. And to show you why, I brought case law.
That's right. You sure did.
So there are two cases I want to talk about today. So the first one is how emojis can be used in contract law. So there's a case called Southwest Terminal Limited versus Actor Land. We can put this case citation in our show notes. But in this case, a thumbs up emoji actually cost a Canadian grain seller $82,000. Here's what happened. There's a buyer named Kent Mickleborough, and there's a grain seller named Chris Actor. Actor was going to sell Mickleborough 86 metric tons, so like 8 school buses, of flax, which is a grain. And he was going to sell it for a contract price of 82 grand. Mickleborough, the buyer, signs the contract, takes a photo of it, and texts it to Actor, the grain seller, and says, please confirm. Actor texts back a thumbs up emoji and nothing more. And apparently this is something he'd done before, and in the context of their relationship, it kind of made sense. Actor is supposed to deliver that grain in November. November rolls around and he doesn't do it. So Mickleborough, the buyer, is like, yo, where's my grain? And Actor says, you know, that emoji just simply confirmed him receiving that text of the contract. It wasn't him agreeing to the terms of the contract or ratifying it. So they end up in court, and the judge initially turns to dictionary.com, of all things. This is actually something judges do. They'll look at the dictionary, dictionary.com. The judge goes to try to find a definition of the thumbs up emoji. And what the judge finds is that that emoji can be used to express assent, approval, or encouragement. Given that definition, especially in light of their relationship, where this grain seller had done that before, had just used the thumbs up emoji to confirm contracts, the court says, yeah, that's a valid and enforceable contract. And Actor, you grain seller, you must deliver on that contract. You must deliver that grain for $82,000. Part of the dispute is by the time November rolled around, who's supposed to deliver it, the price had gone up. And so my two cents is he just didn't want to deliver. Like, it wasn't efficient to perform on that contract anymore because he was going to lose money. So there's that case. I wanted to bring a contrasting one, though, because emojis, that thumbs up emoji is not always construed as assent. In another case called Bardales v. Lamonth, the court held that the use of the thumbs up emoji between two estranged parents didn't mean that one parent acceded to the other one moving out of the country with their child. And in that case, the court looked at the circumstances, the gravity of the situation, and the kind of irresolute nature of that conversation and said, no, a thumbs emoji is not sufficient here. You know, you have to use some sort of heightened level of communication in that circumstance. Anyways, If you're buying grain, be careful. But if you're trying to kidnap your own child, exercise a little more caution. So second case I wanted to bring, second big one, is called In Re Bed Bath & Beyond Corporation Securities Litigation. But in this case, a single emoji actually constituted securities fraud. I thought this one was really fascinating. The case involves Ryan Cohen, who made a fortune running Chewy.com, which is an online pet food store. Cohen switched his interests to meme stocks. I didn't know what meme stocks were before I found this case. Apparently, it's a stock that gains popularity among retail investors through social media. Who knew?
I had no clue.
Cohen gets into meme stocks. He buys a 9% interest in Bed Bath & Beyond, hypes the stock, and then liquidates it, pocketing about $68 million in profits. Bed Bath & Beyond stockholders sued him for securities law violations based on a tweet. We will have the tweet posted on our social media as part of our From the Roost series, which is where we talk about case law. So keep an eye out for that. But what Cohen says in this tweet is simply, at least her cart is full with a full moon face emoji. The court determines in some online circles that full moon face emoji is used as symbolism that the stock price is headed, quote, to the moon. And so based on that, the court says this tweet could be a material representation of the way that Cohen was valuing Bed Bath & Beyond stock.
Wow.
So Cohen goes, that's ridiculous. You know, you can't infer that just from a moon emoji. His exact words were, you can't infer that from a, quote, tiny lunar cartoon. And since I'm a child of the 90s, I immediately wondered if he was referring to Looney Tunes. So the court says, and I want to quote this because I think it's so powerful. So the court said, emojis may be actionable if they communicate an idea that would otherwise be actionable. A fraudster may not escape liability simply because he used an emoji. So I thought that was super interesting. What the court is saying here is you can't use emojis to circumvent the law. You can't try to obfuscate your meaning by throwing a little picture out there and assume that no one's going to interpret it in context or hold you liable for the consequences of it.
Well, and I think that all of this is fascinating because I was in a trial, and I mean, and I'm trying to think of what year this was. It was probably 20 years ago, maybe 15, where the plaintiff in the lawsuit had alleged our client of discrimination. And we found on social media a bunch of discriminatory emojis that this person had used in a joking way, like a ridiculing way, condescending way. And we're like, what? You're the one, you know, in terms of discrimination. But the court would not allow us to enter that evidence. And we argued and argued and argued that it was relevant, and we were never allowed to bring it into court. And back in those days, that's pretty usual. But my, yeah, how things have changed. I mean, today we are prosecuting just based on the emojis. So, I mean, it's very fascinating to me how much this has changed our society and litigation.
Well, one of the points I want to dive into a little bit more is this notion that emojis communicate an idea and that you can construe them based on context.
Yeah. So there's several different ways that emojis are contextual. They're contextual by conversation. So if I send a smile emoji to Angie, like, hey, thanks for dinner last night, girl. She's like, oh, Brie had a really great time and she likes the way that I make turkey or whatever I had to eat. But then if I send Angie a text message at the end of my Friday, I'm like, yep, pretty sure the boss is going to fire me. And I have a smiley face. Angie's like, oh, snap. What did Brie do? Running her mouth at work again and she's in trouble. That smiley face emoji is the same exact emoji, but it's used to construe a totally different emotion. It can also be contextual by person. If I say, hey, Angie, let's do dinner tonight and send her that big old turkey leg, she's like, man, Brie cannot get enough of my turkey. Stop inviting yourself over for dinner. That might be normal.
Get out of my house.
So maybe because Angie and I have that history, she might think that turkey leg is a self-invite to her house. But if I send it to somebody completely different, say, hey, let's do dinner tonight and turkey leg, they're like, oh, Brie wants to go eat at a restaurant. So again, it can, how we have an emoji express our thoughts or emotions can be contextual by person. Also, it can be contextual in terms of culture. Did you know, Angie, that in China, the angel emoji is something that, of course, we think of it as like a good deed or you're righteous. But in China, the angel emoji is actually a sign for death and may be perceived as threatening. So
totally opposite. Yikes. No, that's so true. And culture doesn't even necessarily mean your geography or your nationality, but it can even be like the meme stock case. You know, it can be your professional circle. Sometimes I think about, you know, the difference between an emoji now versus 5 years ago and how it would be different. Let's back up a little bit, because before we even try to interpret emojis, we must first find them and then we have to collect them. So I'm going to pivot us. So emojis are challenging because they aren't text. They're often stored in an image format, which makes them really difficult to collect and process using traditional e-discovery tools.
That's right. Since we're doing this EDRM series, you've heard us talk about collection of data and processing data and metadata and content. That's what we're traditionally used to trying to normalize when we're reviewing data is text. We're thinking documents. We're thinking email. Nowadays... like grandma, these youngsters are using
whippersnappers
modern e-discovery tool that can recognize images. And one way that they do that is through algorithms. Algorithms are specifically designed to identify and classify emojis within data sets, taking into account variations in representation. So that's one way. One way that we find those little stinkers is through algorithms within our e-discovery tool. Another way that we do that is through image recognition technology. This means that we have e-discovery tools and forensics tools, for that matter, that use advanced techniques for recognizing emojis, along with other visualizations like people, faces, and other images that actually mean something to us when we're doing an investigation or producing documents as part of a litigation.
So Bree mentioned a couple of things that we're going to dive into a bit. First of all, you mentioned variations in representation. And one of the ways that the industry has figured out how to deal with that is by standardization. So we're going to talk about Unicode and back up and explain why that's important. If you've ever looked at emojis in Google, GChat versus iPhone versus Android versus Slack, they all look slightly different. A smiley face is a smiley face, right? But one of them might have a slightly darker or wider border. One might be a little bit more pixelated. There are a bunch of little variations. And you can imagine how that could fuck with an emoji detection algorithm if all of a sudden smiley face just looks a little bit different. Like what you were just talking about, Brie, this image recognition technology. If you put in an iPhone smiley face, is that going to register if you've also got Google and Android emojis?
Right. And that's where the Unicode Consortium comes in. The Unicode Consortium is a nonprofit organization that's responsible for developing and maintaining the Unicode standard, which defines a consistent way of encoding characters, including emojis, across platforms and devices.
Yeah. So every emoji will have a Unicode tag associated with it, and that tag remains cross platforms. So, for example, a dollar sign is U0024. A yellow heart is U1Frank49Boy. A poop is U1Frank4Alpha9. But that coding will remain consistent throughout.
I think it would be fun, kind of like Pig Latin, if we just start using Unicode formulas to express our emotions.
have to work for it if you want to know how I'm feeling about that.
Right. So, you know, I mean, as you can imagine, the standardization has a massive impact on e-discovery. Legal professionals rely on all of the e-discovery tools and forensic tools, for that matter, to accurately parse, index, and display digital communications that include emoji. So by following these Unicode standards, our tools can help us ensure that emojis are interpreted and presented in a uniform manner, regardless of where the data originated. No matter if we have taken that from Slack, if we've taken that from Google Chat, if we took it from a cell phone, whatever the case may be, it will all look the same. And that's critical because, like Angie was talking about a second ago, emojis look different on different platforms.
Right. And if your e-discovery tools are equipped with a Unicode compliant algorithm, that can really help you effectively recognize them within large data sets. You know, the bigger your data set, the bigger the problem. The more diverse your data sources, the bigger the problem. So you really want to make sure that your algorithm can account for those things. It's also crucial that you identify those emojis within their context, and that when you're evaluating them, you have a software that will identify them and also put them in their context. Let's talk about the federal rules of evidence and emojis.
Okay.
Listeners, please don't turn out. We're going to make it fun, I promise. The federal rules of evidence, people sometimes forget that the FREs, I'm going to call them FREs, that the FREs apply even to new and novel data, even to new and novel things like emojis. And so you still have to deal with all the original stuff, right? Like they still got to be relevant. You know, in the meme stock case that we talked about earlier, that emoji came in because it was relevant, because it tended to prove or disprove a fact or legal issue in that case. But if Ryan Cohen, in that case, if he'd posted, made a nice stew for dinner with a carrot and an eggplant and whatever else, that wouldn't be relevant. So it wouldn't come in.
The other thing that we've talked about is we really need to be able to authenticate the emojis that were used if we're going to use them as evidence in a court of law. And that could include a wide variety of things. And I'm not going to say this is an exhaustive list, because as you know, this is all subject to change, as are the emojis and the platforms in which we communicate these emojis on. When we talk about authenticating emojis, making sure that Angie received the same image that I intended for Angie to receive. When I liked her text on my Android and it sent her an emoji, was it the same kind of emoji on her iPhone that I was intending to send? That would be a way to authenticate it. It might take us back to that Unicode. What Unicode was used in this emoji? Is that the Unicode for the poop? The brief to communicate or not. And also that might include deposition testimony or testimony in court. You know, hey, Angie, when Bree sent you that turkey leg, how are you feeling about that? Or does your smiley face meant that you were happy that she was inviting yourself over for dinner again? Or was that not your intent?
Seriously. Well, another thing is emojis are communication. They can be hearsay. For those who don't know, hearsay is an out-of-court statement admitted for the truth of the matter asserted. In plain English, that means you're admitting it to prove that whatever is said in that text or in that emoji is true. So if I send Bree a knife and then we're in court and Bree tries to admit it, but it's not hearsay because it's the statement of a party opponent, but we're leaving that aside for right now. The point is, if Bree tries to admit that to show that I wanted to murder her, that could potentially be hearsay. But if Bree admits that text with those emoji to show that, hey, I've got Angie's contact information, see this text thread where I've got, you know, whatever, the first one could be hearsay, the second one isn't. When you're contending with your emoji and trying to get them admitted into evidence, you're going to have to deal with hearsay too.
All good point. Well, I feel like we've given probably more than a bite size. Maybe turkey leg size.
That brings us to the end of our show. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Tell your friends, family, and coworkers about us. And of course, please hit us up on LinkedIn or at admin@ediscoverychicks.com with your thoughts, questions, and drink recommendations. Until next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.